And here's the rule. She runs this worldwide information network that's a real university compared to the academic bureaucracies in New York City. So this professor stayed brave, and he put up with all the flack against him, and everybody tried to stop LaRouche, but LaRouche comes, and there's only like 100 people in the audience. It's an empty auditorium in some university in New York City, or maybe up in Connecticut, someplace like that. Anyways, the thing is, LaRouche gives this tremendous speech, just off the cuff. He doesn't seem to have any notes. And he goes through the whole history of humanity, going back to a million B.C., about whether apes were human or not, and he works all the way up to the present, up to how Obama should be impeached. He's the stupidest president we ever had. That's what he's saying in 2012. And America is doomed unless you make me president, is what he says. You make me my president, and you make and I'll bring you my team, and we've been correct in our forecast for 30 years. We can turn this around in a year. We will move the world. It'll take two generations to do it, but we'll get it going. So there's the modern genius, the modern vorticist, claiming he's got the necessary sovereign megalomania to say that he can solve the problem. You see what I'm saying, Roxy?
Yes, and, yes, and Kate? That's the same thing Zappa was doing in his way. He was also trying to educate the voters.
Did you say Bruno? Giordano Bruno?
Zappa. Frank Zappa.
Oh, Zappa, yes, definitely. Zappa was running for president, too. You must run for president.
I'm sure he was very aware of what LaRouche was saying, because he's using all this. He was aware that the hippies and all these things everybody was praising when Sgt. Pepper first came out.
Yeah. He was criticizing it.
Yes, he said, we're here for the money. That's the thing.
Well, here's what's so hypocritical to
say, oh, the Beatles are peace and love, when they're really a product of the British oligarchy. Social program, society, and sell drugs and all these things. He was very aware about these substances, and that's why I say he's so brilliant, because he was telling you the same things LaRouche is talking about, but with his music, yep, with jokes, with his interviews, because everything was a piece of work. Everything he said, everything he posted.
Right. Now, you know, that's why everybody on my chart is similar, but coming from either efficient causality or formal causality or material causality or final causality. That'd be Croker, Thompson, LaRouche, McLuhan. And with LaRouche's quadrant, you got Mae Brussel. With the McLuhan quadrant, you got Zappa. With the Thompson quadrant, you got Krishnamurti. And with the Croker thing, you got Dr. Beter and Croker. So, in the famous Bob Marshall interview of Zappa in October 21st, 22nd, 1988, Bob Marshall brings up LaRouche. So, you're going to hear what Frank has to say. So, Frank starts off talking about the dental hygiene dilemma. He says, yeah. And that is a animated part of 200 Motels where Jeff Simmons, who wants to quit the group and form a blues band, he's sick of doing comedy music, which is what he calls Zappa. And so he has this cartoon of him in the hotel stealing the towels and hallucinating on TV and being the baby boomer victim of the LaRouche MKUltra exposure. So I bring this up. He says, Zappa's talking about the drug problem. He says, you have to be realistic about what the problem is. The substance itself is not immoral. Without cocaine, you're going to have a hell of a time at the dentist's office. You can't say, quote, we have to burn every coca plant, unquote. Otherwise, no more Novocaine, buddy, says Zappa. So Bob Marshall says, the dental hygiene dilemma, quoting Zappa's own work. And Zappa says, yes. So there are things that you have to consider. There are the fine little points. The problem is that the public gets saturated with the rhetoric about, quote, just say no to drugs. There's a drug problem. That's Nancy Reagan's slogan. And this and that, and it puts it into a context where it becomes a moral menace. It's not a moral problem. It's an economic problem. It's a social problem. It's a mental health problem. And it can be a matter of physical danger to you when you have people who have life and death control over other people who are users. And they can endanger their life, like a physician who might use drugs, who might give you the wrong kind of an operation. or different ways the person who uses the chemical can fuck up your life. That's what you've got to look out for. But the substance itself is neither here nor there. And the person has as much right to drink a beer as he does to use the substance. The only difference is we have prohibition now of these certain substances. If you let your mind drift back to the time there was prohibition against alcohol, think of what happened. Remember, those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. Without Carrie Nation, every Italian in the mafia would be out of business right now. So Carrie Nation is someone who brought in prohibition, stopping alcohol. And if she had not been successful, every mafia would be out of business, Frank says. It was Carrie Nation who put them into business because there was the law of supply and demand. People wanted to drink beer. They wanted to drink gin. And a few guys say, quote, hey, I don't care. I'm going to supply the demand. And they became billionaires. And they eventually found out, and people got killed for years, all during prohibition. The machine gun, let's move this down. The machine gun was busy. People were dying because they wanted a beer. The government literally could not enforce a prohibition on alcohol. And in the time that they had this moral law to keep people from drinking alcohol, they managed to create the empire of organized crime. And the same thing is happening with cocaine. A guy in the jungle with a Swami shirt on someplace is going to wind up ruling half the world because somebody decided that cocaine was a moral problem. Cocaine used to be an ingredient in Coca-Cola. Was it a moral problem then? Okay, so I get Bob Marshall to say, let's bring in LaRouche, because LaRouche is writing a book called Dope Inc., talking about the coming half the world dominated organized crime thing. But LaRouche appears to be a moralist. As Zappa says, that's not the way to do it. So Bob Marshall says, that's well spoken, Frank, you know, what I just read. And that distinguishes the difference between you and LaRouche, because he thinks the solution is to continue banning them. Frank says it won't work. And then Bob Marshall says, and that feeds the problem. Yes, you've made that clear. I'd like to go into the satire you do. You emphasize, and you're known for a polyrhythmic approach to composing. I read a recent interview where you talked about working with harmonic, melodic, and rhythmic elements. But in earlier interviews, I've noticed you emphasizing the multirhythms, the polyrhythms. Do you see that society is hypnotized by a beat, by a rhythm, by a hypnosis, that you feel that you can shake up with your polyrhythms? He says it's real simple, but real complicated at the same time. Now, I'm going to go back up. I have to go back. I didn't start at the right place. So we want to get more about Zappa on LaRouche. So Zappa is saying, talking about the drugs, the cocaine cartel came into the United States and helped the homeless. He said if they did that, like they did in South America, took over in helping the homeless. What do you think would happen to the war on drugs here, says Frank. Playing Robin Hood is easy when you've got that kind of a profit base. It's so peculiar to think about that. And I predict that there's going to be more of that happening all over the world. It doesn't cost that much to give people a little something to eat and a little something to wear. When they've got nothing, anything looks good. You don't have to be a major benefactor. Just give them a little present and you're a good guy. So this is earlier in the interview where we bring in LaRouche. So this is provocative because I'm predicting that Zappa's not going to like LaRouche, but I don't know, so we try it. So Bob Marshall says, two people who predicted that, what he's saying about the drug cartels taking over, were Mae Brussel and a person who was running for president of the United States, Lyndon LaRouche. LaRouche has mapped that out. His magazines are very good for charting these cocaine cartels. Would you support a president who wants to fight that trend or a presidential candidate who's honest about that? Frank says, I certainly wouldn't support Lyndon LaRouche. I'll say that if he has information that backs up what I just heard from a guy who was down there, his own friend, then I credit him for having at least one piece of good information. That seems a little better than saying that the Queen of England is involved in the drug traffic, which is another one of his favorite. So he knew a little bit about LaRouche. He knew about the Queen thing. So then Bob Marshall says, that's the way the media present him. I've read his literature, and he doesn't say that. He says that those old banking networks allow this laundering of dope money to happen through their banks and don't take action, which LaRouche claims he would do, take action. And Frank says, well, what he's done, he's taken some things, which actually are facts, so he's talking about LaRouche, and said them in a way that makes them sound ridiculous. Because of the banking laws in England, it is possible that especially British banking concerns and British offshore banking concerns have been deeply involved in money laundering. In fact, some of their branches set up in Miami are involved in it. We're just now beginning to see how this stuff works. But the other thing that ought to be said is that these people who make the billions from cocaine also finance right-wing governments. You know why? Because as long as the right-wing governments are in operation, the drugs are going to be illegal. And as long as they're illegal, they're going to make more profits. It is so twisted. Then I go, like the pornography. I mean, Bob Marshall says, like the pornography racket. And Zappa says, that's right. Then Bob Marshall says, but what if Farouche is taking on this issue? He's the only politician who's doing that. That's commendable, isn't it? Zappa says, no. I wouldn't say that Lyndon LaRouche is commendable by any stretch of the imagination. I believe, although he hasn't been convicted yet, that the whole business with the credit cards, and LaRouche was in the news right then in 88 and on trial in Boston. So it's interesting that, you know, Frank is aware of LaRouche, and even that he's on trial. He says, that whole business with the credit cards and the rest of that scam, that's not commendable. That's the end justifies the means. That's not commendable. And Bob Marshall is right, but what if certain people have a control over the media and can distort the public's perception of LaRouche, and that there are even people infiltrating his organization to do the credit card fraud because he's the only one taking on this most present, pressing problem that you predicted or that you see coming? He says, I don't think that LaRouche is really taking it on. I don't see him taking it on. I see him stating some facts that any trend spotter could state if you saw it. The way I arrived at it was, I just start with the premise, follow the money. You know, the old Iran-Contra, follow the money. Now, if somebody's got money, what do you do with it? Answer number one, you go for power. Now, where do you get the power? Power comes from might. The might is either going to be in large armaments or in large armies. Now, where's a man with a buck in his hand to spend who... Now, where's a man with a buck in his hand to spend who wanted power going to get an army? The answer is simple, any slum. And then just by chance, last night I talked with this guy who had been in Brazil, and he said that's what they're doing down there. Okay, why, says Frank. Now, Lyndon LaRouche may see this same trend. I don't see Lyndon LaRouche out there fighting it. I see Lyndon LaRouche doing a credit card scam. That's what I see. If I had other information, I would see something else. I don't. Bob Marshall says, but you're relying on the media. And then Frank says, I've seen LaRouche on television. He used to be on Larry King every now and then. I've seen him being interviewed, and he does not come across to me as a guy that I would trust at all. I don't buy Lyndon LaRouche. Then Bob Marshall says, this is an example of a political concern of yours that you wrestle with daily that we talked about at the beginning of the interview. How much do you want to take on and deal with this trend? Do you have any personal strategies for stopping that? Or do you think that the force is so large there's little you could do? He says, the only way that I can see to reduce the influence of something that would behave like a government, cross international boundaries, but not be a government in the sense that people elected it, the only way that you can reduce the influence of that creeping mess is to legalize the substances and cut their economic base. Now let's talk about the drug problem. Drugs do not become a problem until a person who uses drugs does something to you, or does something that would affect your life that you don't want to have happen to you, like an airline pilot who crashes because he was full of drugs. That's a drug problem. I believe that people have the right to commit suicide. You can stick a gun in your mouth. You can stick a needle in your arm. You can do whatever you want, but you own your own body. I think you do. Drugs become a problem when the person who uses them turns into an asshole, and they also become a problem when the person who manufactures and distributes them turns into a politician. That's the drug problem. Now, you want to fight the drug problem? You have to be realistic about what the problem is. The substance itself is not immoral. Without cocaine, you're going to have a hell of a time at the dentist's office. You can't say we have to burn every coca plant. Otherwise, no more Novocaine, buddy. So then it goes into what I read at the beginning, the hygiene dilemma and how you can't take a moral approach. And then Bob Marshall moves into the polyrhythms and something else. Now, Roxy, I read all that to show you
yes.
That personalities get in there. And I'm the only one who can work with all of them. Frank would not work with LaRouche.
Yes, and you're the only one who really noticed these type of things, that that he's aware of LaRouche. And also the people controlling the mass media, the elite, they get what Frank is doing, and that's why he doesn't get aired.
Right. And he gets the press too, just like LaRouche does. He gets smeared.
Yes, so, LaRouche gives the example of Bach,
Bach, yes.
Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, they were also suppressed by the elite.
Right.
And
all the greats are always suppressed. If they're really great, if they're political, if they're dealing with the real ancient battle between Platonism and Aristotelianism. Now, other academics, McLuhan quoted Samuel Taylor Coleridge, you know, the famous poet, 200 or so years ago. It was Coleridge who said, a man is either a Platonist or an Aristotelian. So like Coleridge understood the dialectic within the Gutenberg galaxy, within visual space. You're a Platonist or an Aristotelian. Now LaRouche stays within that. He works with it. He innovates a new way of looking at that battle. But Zappa represents someone who's working in the post-Gutenberg galaxy, making new innovative soundscapes and being political that way. In the Uncle Meat story, he talks about using sounds to kill people, to make them have a bowel movement, to make them do this or that. And that was where science was looking at music, playing with frequencies.
Yes, because like LaRouche and Zappa, I think the solution is to educate the citizen. And that's why for LaRouche, there is a big subject that is the tuning.
Yes.
And
the tuning of C? Is that what you're saying?
The tuning in music.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is he talking so much about tuning? And he explains that it was changed by the Nazis and how this affect
the
perception.
Yeah.
And but these little subtle things is what how they're programming the environment. He defines these mythologies. He says global conspiracies which function succeed by establishing controlled environments around the minds of the credulous masses of the world. Such a controlled environment is summed up efficiently by stating that the credulous masses are ruled by mythologies.
And well, who did you quote there? Did you quote somebody? It's summed up by
yes,
who?
The secrets known only to the inner elite.
Yeah, but in that sentence you just read, didn't you just read a sentence?
Yes, I'm summed reading up. How he defines these mythologies. The
okay.
The elites rule such masses by creating, shaping, and manipulating the mythologies. That's how they control the environment.
That's the medium is the message.
There are also many subtle things, like the tuning of music.
Yeah.
And, people like Giordano Bruno or Bach or Leonardo or Frank Zappa, they're aware of this. Subtleties. And for example, Frank Zappa was also against the romantic music because that's a mythology that.
Yes, the teen music, the love song.
Dumb. all this.
Yeah,
all
it makes
this,
you expect a lot from love and romance. And he says you're going to get disappointed. So he was against the content of teen music. He might like the artistry of it, but, yeah, the lyrical meaning made teenagers stupid.
Like LaRouche says, everything is simplified, and it's just like a catalog of things you learn. Like,
yeah.
He says, kind of encyclopedist and the revolution in France.
The encyclopedist, Diderot, and Voltaire, bad people.
Yes, and one thinks, oh, the encyclopedias, oh, they were great thinkers, blah, 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 blah. And then that's the amazing thing with LaRouche. He goes deeper. See who's financing that. He always looks who's financing that. And he sees this black nobility that comes from Phoenicia, from this city of Tyre that Alexander the Great destroyed.
Tyre.
Alexander the Great was a Platonist.
Yeah.
And the Aristotelians poisoned him. But
he says Aristotle. Now this is pretty crazy. I don't know if it's true or not. He says Aristotle killed Alexander personally.
Well, I believe that now.
But, you do believe it. You say
really
you do believe it?
Because,
yes, what did you just say? Wait, where's the point? Did you say you do believe it? Okay.
Of course. Now I can believe it.
Yeah.
Because to explain something that is happening now, he goes into these metanoias and finding like the very obscure...
Retracing 3,000 years.
Yeah, the characters that are not liked by the black nobility.
Right. Like Dante.
And, and some people that I really like the Templars or Galileo. He thinks are bad because they're financed by the black nobility. But he shows how this nobility comes from the Phoenicians. They go to Venice and then they go to London and they are actually Canaanites. So,
let me just give that quick history. It begins at the time of Babylon or before at the temple at Delphi with the Oracle of Delphi in Ionia. Now, there's something interesting about the way Ion called himself Ion and is an expert on what went on there. We are going back to the original cultist programming place. Ion's redoing it with a newer level. And then you get Babylon. Then the Babylon moves to Byzantium, and then Byzantium goes to Venice. Then Venice has to get out of the Mediterranean and get to the Atlantic Ocean. This is the time of the printing press. So Venice moves to London and Amsterdam, and they rule there for next till now. And it's just that's the British, our actual Venetian and the Middle Eastern oligarchies of very wealthy people that took over England, hijacked England from the English people. And so the Venetians, he goes through, very interesting. You would never hear this from anybody else. There's people like Mr. Conti, or no, Mr. Contarini first, who supports Henry VIII and creates Protestantism. And then there's a guy named Sarpi who promotes Newton. And then there's another guy named Conti who supports – no, Sarpi promotes Galileo, and Conti supports Newton. These dumb guys who weren't anywhere like Leibniz or Kepler. And so you have this whole history that people take as the basic knowledge for the Gutenberg galaxy. And LaRouche exposes every one of them by citing obscure letters and articles that these guys did. They were friends of Newton, friends of Galileo. That's what's really interesting.
It will be like the equivalent of Edison against Tesla. It's like that type of...
Yeah, that's what it is. Like Morgan says, we got to make money out of it. And Tesla says, no, we just move forward. We'll make new environments. And that's LaRouche says. That's the basic battle. The financial oligarchy is only in it...